Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
I'm talking about the combo elves that Gavin posted up on the mothership today.
Oh, calm yourself.
There's just a bunch of terrible lists.
Let's start recording.
All right, speaking of a list, here's a list I got. Are we recording right now?
No, let's start.
All right, let's start this because I've got a brew this week actually.
Are we just recording this?
No, I have a brew. It's good.
Hey, that reminds me of a joke. What's the last thing a drummer says as the member of a band?
Nothing.
Hey guys, I wrote some songs.
That's fine. This brew is good. This is a real life deck.
A what?
A real life deck. I don't do those very often, so.
A real life deck, meaning it has arms.
No, it's not.
It's not built around guild feud.
It's playing all cards that would see play anyway. How's that?
So it's already a deck.
But it's playing Seance.
It's not. It's not playing Seance.
Or guild feud.
What is it? Now you have to tell us what's this deck.
It's got Deadbridge Chant in it.
Oh, yeah.
So we got three Deadbridge.
Marcel's fully erect.
So we got Deadbridge Chant. We got Sorin, Lord of Innistrad. Jace, Architect of Thought. Vraska. Garrick. Far and Away. Farseek. Mulch.
Say
Putrefy.
Something red while you're at
Putrefy,
it.
Putrefy. Think Twice. Lingering Souls. Thragtusk. Snapcaster Mage.
Sounds fun.
I like Advent of the Worm Snapcaster. That's pretty funny.
You don't need to play Advent of the Worm. Like, I was trying to break Deadbridge Chant to, like, reanimate shit, and I realized it just doesn't fucking matter. I put together a three-color deck, and I was happier when I was drawing a Putrefy off it than when I was a Snapcaster half the time.
Yeah,
Putrefy is actually fucking retarded with Deadbridge Chant, if you can empty your yard out especially.
Well, there's no way to empty your yard in this, but, like, Think Twice, because you're running Mulch, too, so, like, you get the Lingering Souls and Think Twice is off the Mulch. Like, the reason this spawned an idea was, like, I want to fit Sphinx's Revelation in here too, but I don't think I can. But this, I was listening to coverage and someone was like, da 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 da, someone played a Mulch on day one and they were playing against a Sphinx's Revelation deck and he missed his land drop and they're like, man, that's all those Sphinx's Revelation decks need is a card like Mulch. And I'm sitting there going like, well, why the fuck don't they play Mulch then? So.
Mulch and,
like,
Farseek. I would almost do the two of them and have eight.
I'm running four Farseek, four Mulch.
Oh, that's actually pretty sweet.
I let you outside a fucking hour ago.
Saying. Like, you're just ramping into, like, you have three different four cost planes.
We should talk about this on the goddamn podcast.
Well, we are talking. This is the podcast. This is Brainstorm Brewery episode number 52.
Oh, really. This podcast.
We are podcasting. Okay.
This is recorded. This is the intro.
Me and Marcel have been going, oh my goodness.
I hate when you do that.
Marcel, which one should we fire first?
I hate that. Ninja horse shit.
I'll stop watching the replay of the Miami game then.
That's good, Corbin.
You guys are going to put it on anyway. We're talking about brews, and you guys don't care about brews at all.
Yeah.
I care about making Ryan feel bad.
Okay, so we have three Deadbridge Chant card, obviously good. Three Sorin, Lord of Innistrad. Two Jace. One Vraska. One Garrick. Three Far and Away. Four Farseek. Four Mulch, four Putrefy, three Think Twice, three Lingering Souls, three Thragtusk, three Snapcaster Mage. Have not put together a mana base, still working on that, but it's pretty fucking simple. Like,
I get to name the deck.
What are you naming it?
Since you're playing Far and Away and Farseek, you gotta call it Far, Far Away.
Oh, deal.
Sounds good. I do like the fact that you got all the flashback spells with the Deadbridge. So if your Deadbridge all of a sudden hits those flashbacks, then you can cast them,
right.
Get them out of the graveyard, so that way you can thin down your graveyard and start getting the spells that you actually want to keep recurring.
Right, and the problem I had at first when I was thinking about Deadbridge Chant, I was trying to reanimate creatures, and this deck's only playing six creatures in the main deck. And I realized, like, you're just as happy to get a spell back most of the time, or just to hit your land drops constantly. So you can use cards like Jace to gain that, you know, card advantage, or just be able to cast those Think Twices over and over, and be able to just filter through your deck, whether or not, you know, they're from hand or from the graveyard. And yeah, you obviously, like, your end goal is to cast a Deadbridge Chant, just bury them in card advantage, and you make enough creatures off of your Planeswalkers that you typically, which you can get back in this deck, which is super nice. That's the other great part about Deadbridge Chant. Just returning a Planeswalker sometime is amazing.
Oh, especially if you have enough counters where you can like ultimate it and then get it back.
Oh, yeah. Insane. Yeah, there's absolutely...
just like you put the one back in your hand and then you're like, well, I'll just go ultimate with this one and then play the one I just got back. Yeah, it's absolutely nuts.
That sounds fun. And I like the bug style. That's where it wants to go.
Yeah, and I think you need white in there. At first, I wasn't like my whole reason for going white originally was to play Supreme Verdict, which I ended up cutting from the list because I realized like the deck just keeps up with aggro between just being able to Fark Seek and mulch and keep your lands going. And then you drop something like, you know, Far and Away to be able to slow them down if you have to, Putrefy to kill their guys, Lingering Souls to block. You know, you get up to a Thragdust to play that, stabilize, and then you cast any number of these Planeswalkers. And, you know, two of them are producing chump blockers, and the other two can either draw you cards or destroy stuff. Like, it just keeps the engines going. And a lot of games I was ending with, like, three or four of my Planeswalkers in play, because you just get them back. Like, it's nice to have a way that you just don't care if you double negative your Jace and kill them off. Because you know you have a way to get him back.
That's awesome. Hey, so I was looking at why Owen Turtenwald in his Jund list that he top aided the SCG Open with. Everyone made a big deal about how he was boarding that in because it gave you so much reach. And what I realized is, oh my god, if you have Deadbridge Chant and Sire both going at the same time, this wasn't anything I thought about before.
That's actually insane.
It's actually non-sane. Like, you actually just get back the stuff you end up pitching to Sire. Plus, if both players are top decking, you're drawing two cards a turn, they're drawing one. You actually just don't lose. So if you're going to main deck Sire, I don't know why you wouldn't main deck Chant. Like, I realize it costs... Everyone's like, oh, six mana. But people are really okay paying six mana to draw three cards and gain three life with Sphinx's Revelation, but all of a sudden you can't pay six mana for Deadbridge Chant.
Well, you know, the difference
is dredge like, 10 cards, and I don't think there's a difference.
Well, the reason why they don't have those in the main deck is because if you have like three Sire of Insanity in your deck and then you put in two Deadbridge Chant and like
six drops.
Yeah, like you draw any two of those in the first like five turns against an aggro deck. Like, you've mulliganed to five, and you're probably just going to die.
Yeah.
And that's why I like this version a lot more, because you're not worried about dropping things like Huntmaster. Like, this deck can, like, Far and Away is by and far, like, just the best way they've done.
It's Far and Away.
By and far, far, far away, gotcha. It's just a great way to deal with Huntmaster. Like, there's so many times where they play Reckoner, and you're like, well, you know, I'll just bounce it or Putrefy it if you can, and then they play it into Huntmaster the next turn, and you kill it off. You drop a Planeswalker that next turn, and very rarely do you lose that game versus Jund if they have a clear board into your Planeswalker.
So how do you beat other Sphinx's Revelation decks? Like, because in my experience, I super like Deadbridge Chant, just like all of us, but like you play Deadbridge Chant and then they Revelation for six, like, you're probably not going to win.
You just eventually deal with their card advantage.
Why aren't you going to win?
Yeah,
they're going to keep casting Sphinx's Revelation, and how are they going
to
win?
Well, they have Detention Sphere and such in their deck, or they just, like, angel you out and kill you.
Right, and, so they go Detention Sphere, and you go, here's Vraska, or out of the sideboard you have, you know, Acidic Slimes. Like, your main deck is very good versus aggro, and your sideboard, you bring in cards like Smiter and stuff, too, versus the Liliana decks. Like, you have all sorts of options.
I don't know, I don't think, it doesn't matter how good your answers are if they're drawn, like, a full grip.
That's
and it also
yeah, well, but you gotta understand is that, like when you get into those type of games, you're playing the long game. So if they got a full grip, they still can only have seven cards max.
That's,
in their
doesn't
hand.
Matter. That's my point. Sphinx's Revelation decks have a better long game than you do with Deadbridge Chant.
Not necessarily.
I'm running more Planeswalkers.
Yeah, I think you actually do have a. I think you have inevitability. I think there's
a
really small window where they can turn the game around, where if they can like angel you out, like you said. But I wouldn't say that the deck that's drawn a bunch of you know, I don't know. I don't think they have inevitability. I think you probably do with the Deadbridge Chant.
Because there's so much removal. Like, if you're playing those type of decks, you're playing so much
you've
removal.
You've got a ton of removal, and you're recurring your removal. They're not recurring anything. So they're digging deeper for new threats, but you're recurring your old threats. Anything they deal with, you get back.
What I'm telling you is that I played this in block. I played like seven or eight games, like, you know, this kind of like junk value Deadbridge Chant deck against the Sphinx's Revelation deck, and I lost very hard. Because my chant would either get countered or I'd chant and they would Revelation for a million and then my chant would be dead and I would have no more cards.
Like, alright, so here's the question. How many Planeswalkers were you playing in that deck?
I was playing three Vraska. Like I said, this was block. Like, I'm just commenting on the Deadbridge Sphinx's Revelation.
And normally that wouldn't be enough, but in here you have four. I mean, you have nine Planeswalkers in the deck.
Planeswalkers are obviously super powerful.
So they have to counter all of those. Like, they can't let Jace, Vraska, Garrick, or Sorin resolve. They don't like that card, because all of a sudden their Supreme Verdicts are much worse, or their card advantage is much worse, because yours continues. And you can kill every creature they play, so they can't kill your Planeswalkers, except for by that same detention sphere, which you're talking about clearing your Dead Bridge chance every time. Like, there's just too many permanents for them to deal with, I found.
Well, like I said, yeah, that definitely makes sense when you expand it to standard and you have those Planeswalkers, which is, you know, I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just talking about, like, Chant versus Revelation. Revelation wins.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And let's get off Dead Bridge Chance nuts and, you know, like, move on to something else, because this card
is
good.
What else is there? I actually don't care about anything else in the entire set.
I did get my 29 Chance in the mail. I finally got them now. I'm sitting on them.
Nice. One of the places I ordered actually confirmed shipment, and the other two haven't, so we'll see. I'm supposed to be getting, like, 32 playsets, so we'll see if I actually get any.
Do we want to do Picks of the Week?
No, I'm not prepared for that.
I only have one card in mind, and we're not allowed to mention that card now. It's on the Seance ban list.
Yeah, I mean, we could do Picks of the Week, that's fine, because...
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone's got a card that they think we should dump, so.
I mean, I'm actually going to talk about a card to pick up, so.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Start it off.
Yeah, Corbin, you're the one that wanted to do it, Corbin, so why don't you go first?
Yeah, start us off, and then I'll look up.
I say this, and it's the card we're not supposed to talk about, but it's Deadbridge Chant, and I'm not saying that it's a good pickup.
That was our pick of the week last week.
Yeah, pick up. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that right now, like, if you have them and the price has spiked, like, it may be right to dump it. Like, I think you probably wait, you know, it's really the first 2 weeks after a set releases before the prices really move anywhere in terms of just general cards going down. Okay, so we're in the first week here. We got the spike that we expected on Deadbridge Chant. It's gone up. I think you wait until next weekend, and if people are playing it and do well with it, then maybe you hold on to what they're at. But if the card kind of falls off the radar next weekend, or just is only a one of in a sideboard or something, you probably dump them at $9 or whatever, $8. And then, you know, because if that's all the play they're going to see, they're probably going to drop back down. So, like I said, it's great that I think that we called it, and obviously it's made people money at this point, but you need to be very wary of not holding on to them for too long.
Yeah.
So your pick of this week is to maybe sell Deadbridge Chant, maybe keep it, not this week. That's your pick of the week. That's good stuff, Corbin.
Yeah,
number one.
I know. You keep
that's why you're everybody's favorite.
He's just exercising caution, because we're over there massaging these Deadbridge Chants. And
okay, well.
You got to have some reason.
Like I said, like, and I know people, and I think I read this in, like, a Craig Wesco article, you know, hold judgment on whatever as far as financial advice. But what I'm saying is that there was enough of a response where he talked up a card, they got in on it, and they held it way too long, and then came back and complained to him, and it was a big deal, you know, in his article writing world. And I don't want us to get in that same position where we talk up a card and people hold on to them, and then they just hold on to them for a month, and, you know, it's back down to $4. So that's why I wanted to bring it up, just to – you keep an eye on it. If it continues to see play and more play, you probably hold on to them because it'll go up. But if it sees the same amount of play next week and it did this weekend, then the card is going to come back down. Who wants to go next?
All right, so my pick of the week is a Moto card. I'm actually going to throw two of them.
Did you hear that? Nobody said anything disdainful.
Yes, you guys did. I could
–
Your absence of cheering and clapping.
Yeah! Moto! I would love to be educated about Moto Finance, Marcel. Please continue.
Yeah. Okay. Jason, you're just so condescending. This is ridiculous.
I literally cannot wait to hear what you want to say. I'm actually genuinely interested, and I don't know how to convey that without sounding sarcastic.
Maybe you should just, whatever. Anyway, so
I feel like dying of fire was in the next line there. I might be a little off. Choice of death.
He's not going to have a great time in Vegas. Let's put it like that. I'm going to make your life difficult there.
Marcel is going to dump your mattress in the pool.
He's going to lose to me at a barbecue contest. That's what's going to happen.
Oh, I'm entering this barbecue contest too.
Oh, yeah.
Judge, that's what I'm going to do.
I am making some curry chicken wings, and they're going to be delicious.
Better than B-dubs?
Well, I mean, I could worse? Go to Myers and beat B-dubs from the frozen right, aisle. But...
No, I feel like we've really stolen Marcel's thunder at this point.
Jason's next level troll the moto market here by distracting us. Marcel, tell us about moto cars.
Well, I want to hear more about barbecue, though, actually. Sounds good, but all right.
My pick of the week is barbecued wings.
Barbecue wings with Frank's hot sauce. Do it cheap. Now, so I'm going to say go, if you're on moto, get your Watery Grave. They're about $2.75 right now, and I pretty much think that's about as cheap as you're going to get, along with Gideon Champion of Justice is about $4.25. I just think those are probably about as cheap as you'll possibly find those cards, and they've got pretty much nowhere else to go but up, especially Gideon. I think he's just one of those planeswalkers that people are just not respecting, and he's fairly powerful. Like, once he gets on and you got other planeswalkers to protect him, he can do some stuff that takes over the board. So he's just, I think, not being realized. And, you know, you'll see it's kind of like Jace last year. You know, Jace was a really cheap card, and you just find the right deck that wants to play with it, and he takes off because it's a mythic, you know. It's a planeswalker, and at $4, you really, I think it's a pretty good pickup to get.
You know, what planeswalkers do on Moto? Like, what do you expect if Gideon were going to see play? Like, what's his trajectory then if it's actually adopted?
Somewhere 10 to 12 and maybe even as high as 15. I mean, he would have to see major play to reach anything into 30, 35 and like in different formats, and I don't see that happening. But if you get him at four and he's up into the $12, I'd be happy with that. 10 to 12.
Even 10. Like, turning him anytime you can double up, be happy.
So, I mean, Tamco right now is about 14, and I don't think he's on par with Tamio. And
what's interesting is that I wonder if there's a, and this is kind of something that I think comes up at the end of every rotation, is the Super Friends deck. And you have one of, I guess, the key elements to it in the three drop that, you know, the year Super Friends was very good. It had the three drop Jace. You know, speaking of you talking about Gideon, made me think about it now with Ra's Eric out as well, which gives you another like four drop removal, stick around and give you value planeswalker. I wonder if there's a possibility of a Super Friends deck popping up. Anyways, it was a bit of an aside. I mean, do you think Gideon would see play in something like that? Cause he seems like he's very good in and you know, one of those where you have a bunch of permanent control.
Yeah, actually, I was playing an Esper control deck that had, it was a Super Friends deck that had Gideon along with, Jason, Tamio and some other effects. And he wasn't as effective there because he was a little fragile. There wasn't as many other things to help divert the attention. But I played him also in another Bant deck that had more board presence, and he was actually pretty powerful there because he's just, you can't kill him. Once he hits the board, the only thing you can do is, you know, exile him from the game, but, or, you know, like a tragic slip type of effect. But other than that, I mean, he's pretty resilient. There's a lot of things that you just want to use him and get him out the way, but you can't do it. And if he just diverts a few attacks and whatnot, he has the potential to just get in there. He's not going to be this format warping, but if with the right deck that could divert the attention, he beats down and you want to get rid of him. He's a thorn in the side that you just really can't deal with.
I think if we look back, one of the things we said we didn't like about Gideon was the fact that he costs 4 mana. And I think with a lot of the Innistrad block stuff that costs 4 rotating out, he actually may get consideration in that 4-drop spot that's so crowded right now.
Yeah, so the 4-drop, if you think about it right now, in both creatures and planeswalkers, it's just flooded at the moment. So there's definitely going to be space open up after rotation there.
And then with the M14, we're going to get probably a couple more planeswalkers. So I mean, this is when the Super Friends decks are most viable, is when you have so many different planeswalkers to choose from. And you can mix and match and actually build something. So.
I would love to see Sliver Queen come back as a planeswalker.
never mind. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Hold yourself. anyway, so my pick of the week, I suppose. I actually have two, and it goes right along with what Corbin was talking about, the Super Friends idea. My picks of the week are Vraska the Unseen and Sorin, Lord of Innistrad. Sorin's a little bit of a strange one, because, I mean, he's just got reprinted, obviously, like, you know, he just tanked in price. But I think that he's seeing a lot of play in these junk decks again, and his price has not recuperated from the fact that, you know, when he got reprinted, he wasn't seeing nearly as much play, and he still held on to $10. And now he's seeing significantly more play, especially this past weekend, and his price is still stabilized, you know, at $10. I think there's room for him to grow. I don't think it's something that I want to go and pay cash on, But I absolutely think that if I see them for trade, I want to pick them up in the next couple of weeks because I think they're going to quickly spike to 15 or 20 if this deck continues to see as much play as it is. And, I mean, they were seeing a lot of casual peel play before, and I think that's what drove the price up as high as it was. And I see that coming back. So even if not in the short term you don't make money on it, I think they're a good hold for a year, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the most more expensive, you know, casual Planeswalkers.
Makes sense.
And with Vraska, I just think $8 for any Planeswalker that's seeing play is too cheap. I mean, Jace Architect isn't seeing any play, and that's $10. And Vraska's seeing significant.
Actually, yeah, she's cheap.
She's super cheap, $8. Like, and you know, I've digged on her for not doing.
Always thought Vraska was too cheap.
And like, I've always digged on her for not doing enough, and I still don't think she's like exactly the Planeswalker you want to play. But she's the Planeswalker you will play for the, you know, Vindicate ability.
Like, well, there's also just the fact that, you know, maybe not right now, maybe it's another month, but like basically you're almost to peak supply for Vraska and demand can't go much lower, you know, so like it just, even if the card never really does a lot, I mean, at some point it will bottom out and that's probably where we're close to.
Yeah, I have to believe so. So yeah, that's my two picks. Like, I don't think I go for either one in cash. I mean, I could see if Vraska picks up a lot of play this next weekend, possibly going in if I can find him on eBay for like sixes, but I wouldn't want to go in any deeper than that.
All right. And then
Jason, what do you got?
He's still furiously typing, I imagine.
I'm not really typing. Honestly, I've spent all my what is my pick of the week thinking time this entire week, not sure what the hell to do with Rails Eric. Now, Rails Eric is a card that was the most expensive pre-order. It was about $33, and Voice of Resurgence was about $20. Rails Eric dropped a little bit, and Voice of Resurgence hit about $30, so they actually passed each other. Rails Eric passed, on his way down, passed Voice on its way up. Rao was in the blue, red, white flash deck, as I think like a two or three of, the one that got top eight. And I'm not sure if, there was one other blue, red, white flash deck in the top 16. I'm not sure whether Rao Zarek gave it that much reach. I'm looking at the list and it was just sort of like the red, blue, white kind of flashy. It was the real charm heavy one that was like capable of giving the Boros Reckoner lifelink and indestructibility, and then you gain the infinite life. So it had that combo in there and all that kind of junk. I'm not really sure what Rao Zarek's plus one is doing in that deck. So I don't know if you want to pay four mana for a couple Searing Spears and then try to build to his ultimate. I'm really not sure what it does for the deck, just staring at the list. So the fact that he, you know, was super hyped because he's a Planeswalker, there still isn't a lot of the set available, and he actually was in a deck that top eighted. I don't know what that means. But if you look historically at Architect of Thought, where he had that big weekend and then all of a sudden it was $50, I don't know if trading for Rao Zarek at his current, like, 2025 is actually all that terrible. So I'm not really sure what to do with Rao Zarek, because he was a card that I was like, if I open these in a pack, I'm going to dump them. And I sort of dirtled, and, you know, I got two in the box I opened, and I'm still holding them, because I don't know what it's going to do. I think maybe you want to try to trade this out for full value, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rao Zarek really takes a big jump. So this is a card that I'm actually just going to watch for another week, so I would probably hold them just to see what they do, like Corbin said. I know that's not really an answer, but I would try to trade into them, if only because I think they should at least maintain their value for another week. So if you can trade into them, if they don't do anything, I don't know if they're going to plummet necessarily. I think they'll maintain around 25 where they are right now. So I would probably try to trade into Rao Zarek, hold them for about a week or two to see if they do anything, and if they don't, dump them and try to get as close to 25 as you can.
That's fair. Well, while you're on the topic of Voice of Resurgence, I would just like to pat myself on the back and say that I was very surprised this time around when I was like thinking about the spoilers, and I thought about it in a very different way. And like, it ended up resulting in me catching Voice of Resurgence while I was at 20 and thinking that, you know, well, if it sees plays that first weekend, it's going to spike. And sure enough, that happened. And if you were one of those people who went and traded for them at the pre-release thinking, you know, 20 might be crazy, it could just as easily tank. The buy list on them now is like 18. So, I mean, if you turn 20 into 18 cash, you're pretty happy with that all day long.
With that said, I assume you're telling people to dump them now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 30 is very expensive. The card is good. It's a 4 of in a lot of sideboards, but it's not seeing enough play in Eternal formats. I mean, I don't think it's really going to. If it starts seeing Eternal play, maybe it can go higher, but I think that you can just as easily get them as they drop back down a little bit before that catches up, if it's going to see any play at all.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I think you absolutely dump them now, but I think they were a good pickup pre-release weekend, and I don't normally go in on cards like that because I prefer to, you know, look at the smaller investments like Deadbridge Chant, stuff like that. But I did trade for a couple, and I was very happy that, you know, they gained 50% in the course of like 2 days.
That's the problem. The card's got to go from 20 to 30 to make 50%. So Voice of Resurgence was a card that a lot of people talked up. You know, some players were saying, wow, this is the best card in the set. It's very powerful. But I still don't want to buy it at 20 because the card's got to really go nuts for you to, you know, be able to make a decent profit.
But I will happily trade for them at 20.
I'll trade for them at 20, sure. But yeah, I mean, I would rather pay 250 cash on a Deadbridge Chant and then sell for 8 later than hope that Voice of Resurgence goes from 20 to 30 as people are constantly opening tons of packs.
Right, and even then you look at the buy list, and unless you have an outlet like eBay, it still wasn't worth it. You still lost $2, technically. That's why, like, I would never suggest buying in on a card unless you think it's going to at least double when you get into those high of, you know, expenses. Like, say you think a card is going to go from 20 to 40 because it's seeing that much play. That may be worth buying in, but even then you got to remember your buy list at most is usually going to hit 25, maybe 30 if everybody's just sold out. And you really, like, again, unless you have a separate outlet, sometimes those large investments are far worse because, like, a card like Deadbridge Chant, if it sees any play, we knew it was going to go from, you know, the $4 or $3 it was at online to, you know, $8, and all of a sudden you can sell.
15 is not unreasonable if it sees a lot of play. So, you're right. Like, a $2 card is more likely to quintuple than a $20 card is to double.
Right. But I don't think there was enough cards in this set for me to ignore a card like Voice of Resurgence because I think, as far as the trading goes, like, you know, you want to have targets to pick up, and there really just wasn't much in the set that I thought was underpriced at all. And Voice of Resurgence, although risky, I think did, you know, obviously it turned out well, but I think even the downside of it would have given you a week or two to trade it away at 20 or maybe even 15 and take a small loss at worst.
So I guess I agree with you guys. I want to just say this, and it's something I think we take for granted a lot, that it's possible somebody out there doesn't understand the difference when we talk about, oh, I don't want to buy that card at 20, but I'd happily trade for it at 20. Is you just look at it from the cash end. If you are trading for a card at 20, it means you're trading for it at its retail price. So the buy list on it is usually 10 to 12. So you're getting in it. Basically, it's trading for a $20 card is basically like buying a copy of that card for $10 to $12, which is why, like you talk about Voice of Resurgence, you want to buy, you want to trade for it at 20. So you're getting, you're investing $10, $12 in cash rather than buying in for cash at 16 or 17, even if you get a good deal, because you need it to go so much higher to make that cash back.
Yeah, especially if you can get rid of things like Shocklands. And, like, I don't think Shocklands are going to take a major hit in the long run, especially. Like, I discussed that this past week in my article. I went through and did some of the math behind it, and we really aren't opening that many more than you would normally open.
Told you.
Yeah, we did have this talk.
Yeah. Well, like, the main reason being, when I went and ran the numbers, is because everything was triple drafted, and it wasn't that you drafted Gatecrash with Ravnica. Those prices on Ravnica stabilized a lot quicker than they would have otherwise, and the Gatecrash prices dropped a lot quicker, and they, like, I kept that price stable, and so that, like, that's the market price now. And you put, you know, a very finite amount more in because you're really only getting a quarter in your third pack of a chance of getting what you would in a normal pack of either Gatecrash or Return to Ravnica.
Right. This is like when I'll try to touch on very quickly, but surely we have some new people since then. It is, if you just look at it from a yearly perspective, not, you know, the, your opening shocks for this long, blah, blah, blah. Just look at it compared to, like, the Innistrad lands and the terms, or the Scars lands before that, just the number of packs per draft throughout the whole year, not just one season. They're comparable to fetch lands. They're comparable to Scars lands. They're a little more than Zendikar, or than Innistrad lands. But that's why I was never super bearish on them, because it basically, in the end, it more or less balances out. So, yeah,
I think they are going to drop some. I think what's going to drop are the ones that aren't seeing play. And like I mentioned in that article, I think some of those shocks are going to hit $4 or $5, and you just buy into them because at some point over the course of the next year, there will be a deck that wants that color combination. It's just like Badlands. Like, eventually it saw its day in the sun. Even Plateau back in the day. I mean,
just get everyone you can. All the RTR shocks right now are the best things. Gatecrash ones, I'd like to come down a little more, but the RTR ones, I'm still picking up like crazy, and I get them, you know, at $6 to $8 in trade, depending on which one it is, and that's fine with me.
Right, especially if you're looking for a long-term hold, like I know you do, Corbin. I mean, for short-term, it's obviously a little worse. I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm targeting them, but I don't have a big issue picking them up.
What about picking up these new event decks?
This one,
I think they're just doing the one, right? Yeah, one event deck for each new set, starting with Dragon's Maze.
Yep.
So this one is called Strength of Selesnya, if that tells you anything. This is a green-white with a splash of black deck. The black is going to help you flashback Lingering Souls, and I think that might be it. So you can find the deck list online on the Mothership. We're just going to go real quick to the salient elements, which is there's a Godless Shrine. There is
Advent
of the Worm. There is three Lingering Souls, a Parallel Lives, and two Rancors. And I really feel like that's about all value-wise. I think this is probably one that the store owners are not going to gouge anybody. They're probably going to sell this for MSRP. This is a deck that you could pick up and play at FNM and not be a total monkey. But at the same time, there's not a ton of value in this finance-wise, so I'm not actually super excited about picking this guy up for speculation purposes. So this is they're announcing they're only going to do one event deck from now on, and this one isn't really all that great.
And they're printing the crap out of Lingering Souls in the last year and a half or however long it's been.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure why.
I mean, it's a card I had pegged at $5 in, you know, a year, 2 years, and they've just reprinted it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, I'm off Lingering Souls. I feel like the card's still eventually going to be worth quite a bit more than it is now.
It'll take a while.
But I don't think it's ever going to hit Aether Vial levels just because of how many times it's been printed initially.
I mean, I don't even think it's going to hit Kitchen Finks levels at this point just because there's so many printings. I mean, maybe far down the road, but, like, I expected it to be Inquisition and Kozilek.
In a year?
Yeah, like, it'd be $5 to $6 at least, but just not happening now.
Yeah, not at all. I agree.
I don't know if that they did that on purpose. I think Lingering Souls is such a... It's a card that... Well, I don't know necessarily. I think when they put it in event deck, they don't print event decks to make the price go down necessarily as much as they print the event decks to be playable. Lingering Souls is a card that new players can grok, and older players understand that that advantage is very good. So everybody likes the card Lingering Souls. So when they print the event decks that can run it, I think people want to be able to play it, so they jam it in there, and as a consequence, the price has gone down, but I don't think that was their intention.
I think a big part of it, too, and the reason they're printing these like high-power uncommons multiple times is because in a deck like this, where you want it to be competitive, you really want the feel of a card to be rare, and Lingering Souls is one of those few uncommons that's been printed as of recent where if that card was a rare, nobody would have complained. And so it lets you not pack these, you know, event decks full of rares so that they are super expensive, but still get that rare power level so that it is competitive in like an FNM scene.
Sure. So, I mean, there are lots of good reasons to print Lingering Souls, and I don't think chief among them was control the price of Lingering Souls, because I don't think that was anything they ever cared about.
I think it was a happy accident. I think that they don't want Aether Vial style cards again because, you know, it only hurts the modern player or the legacy player who's trying to get in. But at the same time, yeah, that was not their main focus.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know when they were putting these together, but maybe 3 months, a couple months after Lingering Souls came out, it was all over every format. So I'm sure they just put it wherever they could at that point. It probably coincided about the time they were planning out this. So, probably. But yeah, the Parallel Lives is the other thing to talk about. I don't think it's going to hurt the price of Parallel Lives any. I do think it will cause it to grow a little slower than it would have otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know that it will initially drop.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if there's no financial incentive for people to buy these up to open them and sell the singles, I think a lot of these are going to remain on shelves and sell a little more slowly than the other ones did. So I think if there's no incentive for the, you know, the LGS owners to gouge the price on these, so I think they'll probably just sit. They'll probably end up in the hands of players if they're affordable. And, you know, a somewhat decent deck. So if they end up in the hands of players, I don't think that'll affect the price of stuff like Parallel Lives very much at all. So I think that's actually fine. I'm pretty happy with how this event deck is going to end up affecting things.
Yep. All right. Where to, boys?
It's time. Magic 2014.
Hold up. Before we do that, we got to plug our shirts in the middle of the cast.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So everyone... We have the links in the show notes. We'll have them on our Twitter feed. We got Brainstorm Brewery shirts. We got our logo on the back on one. We got three different designs, a black and white one, a full color on the front, and then Brainstorm Brewery and white on the front and a full color on the back. We need to order 20 of them. It's through Teespring, so it's kind of like Kickstarter for T-shirts. So we need to order at least 20 of each shirt for us to be able to print them. They're 15, 20, and 23 respectively. So we need you guys to get out there and get them. If you get them right now, they should be good in time for GP Vegas. So if you are going to Vegas, you could support your Brainstorm Brewery shirt out there. And if you wanted to, we could, I'll be out there so you don't have to do the shipping. I could give them to you there. So however you want to do it. But yeah, check out the shirts. Shirts are sweet. You know, support the cast. I mean, you're getting a full color. So, you know, you're getting good 8-color design right there on the color one. So that's where the cost comes in. But we're not really making anything on them. We just want to get them out to people.
Yeah, I think that's the important part. Like, we're really just the whole Teespring thing is, like Marcel said, kind of a Kickstarter. So we're actually, I think some of the pre-orders are from me just wanting some of these shirts. So, we're not making money off of this. We're just trying to provide our fan base with something everybody said they wanted. So, they look sweet. Go ahead and check them out on the show notes and, get some pre-orders in.
Yeah. And I mean, if these go well, we'll be doing future shirts, you know, maybe some of the more popular sayings on the cast, like, you know, shut up Corbin and some other things like that. But, yeah, for now, I mean, the Brainstorm Brewery logo, I think looks friggin' sweet, especially when you do it in, color like that. I mean, it's really vibrant. And I'm probably going to buy a couple myself just to have to wear all weekend in Vegas. I'll look like a hobo wearing the same shirt, but I won't actually be.
Yeah. And if you guys don't like the design, don't buy it. That's how we know. That's why we put three different ones there. So whatever works, you know, is what's going to sell. So, you know, that's the way you can speak to us and let us know that you want to continue doing a certain design or something else, or, you know, give us some feedback on that. Cause we could play around with the logo a little bit. So there's, you know, so let's know. So yeah. But,
And if you have a suggestion, we'll run that up the flagpole. If we get enough people to pre-order the design you come up with, we're not married to any of it. So if someone suggests a design and people run with it, we're totally happy, you know, that being one of the shirts too.
All right. Is it time? Do we get to talk about it?
Oh my goodness, Corbin, you still want to go on about M14?
Nobody cares.
There's slivers. I like slivers a lot. I think financially it's not going to be that relevant.
Like Corbin's like, can we talk about it? Ryan's like, yeah, there's slivers.
Yeah. Slivers are like merfolk, right? Kind of.
Well, actually, honestly, I thought Jason was a big fan of slivers. I thought he would be more excited about this.
I like good slivers.
I like good slivers. I like crystalline sliver.
There are actual financial implications of this. Okay.
So old slivers will be worth more money because the casual crowd will get an infusion.
There's Ryan. There's more Ryan. There. That's like, oh yeah, Rosebud was a sled. Go ahead, Corbin.
There is much more to it than that. So despite your trolling, I'm going to tell people because I think this is important. The slivers that have been spoiled so far all have the wording slivers you control. Which is akin to, you know, how they, like they did with Master of Pearl, trying to make it Merfolk you control instead of the Lord of Atlantis wording where it's all Merfolk. So all the old slivers had all slivers gain whatever. The new ones just say or slivers you control gain whatever. So what that tells me is that there will be no reprints. And like Ryan said, the old ones will gain value, but it'll be just like Cemetery Reaper going up in value when a bunch of zombies came out, but you don't have to worry about the old ones being reprinted because of the change in wording. And I think that is, you know, financially relevant.
Yeah, if anything, another muscle sliver effect may make it playable in Legacy.
Yeah, because really the problem with slivers right now, I am a big fan of the meat hooks, but what I ran into is every time I tried to build the stupid slivers deck, when they printed Coralhelm Commander and then Master of the Pearl Trident, why play your sliver deck? Why be 4 or 5 colors when you could be mono blue and have more lords, a better mana base? Like, how many Mutavaults are you running in the slivers deck that's 4 colors? Like, how bad do you get your pants pulled down from Wasteland? There were just a lot of considerations. You had fewer lords, you had an inconsistent mana base, and really you were sacrificing the consistency of the Merfolk deck for what? For Crystalline Sliver, which, you know, it's great, but you could run Kira and Merfolk. So basically the one reason you would play slivers over Merfolk is to have Dormant Sliver, you know, which is a good way to get around the Wrath effects. But other than that, it wasn't worth messing up your mana base. If we have another quote unquote Sliver Lord, which is all slivers get +1/+1, or, you know, slivers you control get +1/+1, you know, something to tack on to muscle and sinew, it may actually be worth revisiting just because I think Merfolk is really struggling with Supreme Verdict and Terminus right now. And I think if you have 4 dormant slivers, that would mitigate that slightly. So I'm actually probably going to reexamine slivers if we get something like that.
I think even in modern is a possible, like, if you get 2 sort of lord effects, like even one just +1/+0 and another one's +1/+1, and they're reasonably cost, I could see modern slivers being a thing.
Cavern of Souls and Aether Pile, and that helps with the mana obviously.
You have Ancient Ziggurat.
Yeah, Ancient Ziggurat's good.
Then the problem is if slivers ever get popular, then you got the original slivers that affect both of them and people start.
Oh, it's definitely a rules nightmare if anybody starts playing them in a, or a judge nightmare, not so much a rules nightmare, a judge nightmare if you start playing with them in modern.
Yeah. Well, you could actually.
It'd be no worse than Merfolk is right now.
Well, yeah, but with Merfolk, it's only one card, whereas with slivers, I imagine it would be more than, like, it would just, it's not easy. I mean, it's a pain. But yeah, what do you guys think? I know one of the big sliver cards is on the ban list, but or the restricted list. But I'm sure they're going to want to do throwbacks. And do we think this is just an M14 thing, or do you think they're going to be in Theros somehow?
I hope they're not in Theros. Please don't be in Theros.
The Vorthos people are already, like, filling their diapers about how did the merfolks end up on this plane, or the slivers end up on this plane. I don't think that they're going to throw another Vorthos nightmare in there by having them end up in Theros as well. I
think I agree.
So slivers are cool, but when they were in Time Spiral.
Spiral.
And they came back. It was fun, but it wasn't fun for the full three blocks.
Yeah, like, I mean,
you wanted it to be over with.
They were good in limited, but like none of the slivers that they printed in the Time Spiral block were gonna be all that good and constructed.
That's it was like you got Sinew, which was like your second muscle, but at that point it was too late.
Yeah, and like, I don't, it seems like a pretty good gimmick for them to bring back for the core set, and then basically just be a throwaway, but it's still a selling point for the core set.
Well, it's so popular or casual. Like this, and then they affect only their players, so these are like casual fixed slivers. These are like
for sure.
Perfect for the core set. Like, you can't get better than this.
God, it's better than bringing back what was the mechanic from M13?
Bloodthirst?
No, the thing that they put on the black and white creatures.
Oh, I know.
Exalted.
Is it Exalted? I thought. Yeah. See, I don't know the names of things. Yeah, they brought back Exalted, but just on black and white creatures. That was pretty unpopular.
Yeah, it was a fan.
Yeah. Well, it was better than Scry because Scry just made busted cards.
No,
yeah.
Scry was the best. I like Scry.
But Preordained just broke like every format that you combo with it.
But I believe that you know, for slivers, like you said, the casual appeal's there. It's gonna make the old cards go up. But it also like it's super easy for core set. Like, it's no different than any other tribe. Like, they put soldiers in there before. Slivers are easy to understand. I mean, you look, is this a sliver? Okay, it gets these abilities. And even if you need to write them down on a piece of paper to remember what your creatures have, I think it will also allow the better competitive players to, you know, draft that slivers deck and really understand the interactions and possibly mess up their opponents on combat math just because there is so much in the board. So, I don't know. I think it's going to bring some skill to the core set while at the same time still allowing new players to understand and really understand why they're losing to that particular skill and possibly pick up on it. I think it's a great learning tool, too. I think slivers are perfect for a core set.
This is all good stuff. And you know what? I still see people playing the like black white or mono black exalted decks at FNM even now. So I think this will be something that people, you know, love to play at FNM for a whole year.
I wouldn't mind jamming slivers if it's a reasonable like tier 3 deck. I think it'd be fun to play once.
I think everything will probably be a mana too expensive, unfortunately.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know that it will be super competitive, but I think it'll be a deck where you could have fun with it in FNM and not really care if you went 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. That was a lot of good discussion for something that Ryan didn't even want to talk about.
No, he wanted to talk about before you could. It was funny.
Yeah, I really just wanted to shut you down, actually.
Yeah. It's really funny when
they're
you wanted
official
to talk
now.
About it.
They're actually on Gathering Magic.
Yep, they're official.
Oh, yeah. That is good. It's not a
I'm
salvation mystery.
Yeah, no trolls.
Yep, so a lot of people were saying, hey, they have a picture of Sliver Queen. Are they going to reprint Sliver Queen? They came right out. Said on Twitter, no, they are not because Sliver Queen is on the reserve list. And silly.
I bet we get a Mythic Sliver Lord, though.
Oh, I bet we do.
I could actually see them reprinting Sliver Legion, which I looked this up. I can't believe Sliver Legion is like $20.
Yeah, I could easily see that being reprinted. I wouldn't be surprised if there's two Sliver Lords. Maybe even one that's not five color.
But I don't think they'll reprint Legion because of the all slivers clause. Like, I think you'll probably just get some other arbitrarily mythic large sliver. Like,
Oh yeah, that's true, Jason. You just contradicted yourself. You said that they wouldn't be printing any of the old slivers.
I didn't say that. I stayed out of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but like, to me, it's 100%. They've made it very clear that the new wording is what they're going to go with. I don't see any way that they would contradict themselves. They're just going to make new ones.
Yeah, it would be stupid of them. It would feel very bad with the new players. Like, how is this one sliver different?
Yeah.
I bet there are four slivers in the whole set.
No, you already got sick.
You could play a sliver merfolk deck and still not have enough creatures.
What the next one has changelings. Now you got your merfolk.
Oh, yeah, man. And your slivers. You could play the hybrid.
You could play all fish the six drops.
Call it fish hook, meat hook.
So did you guys see this fish Modern Masters card?
Yes.
They got an Aether Spell Bomb.
Aether Spell Bomb, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, where did that come from?
It was in a, like, not a booster pack, but, like, I think a like some sort of promo pack that a store got sent.
Oh.
And yeah, like they're claiming it was totally by mistake, which, you know, I could see. Because there was a lot of speculation when Rootbound Defenses was spoiled that, oh, they just put Rootbound Defenses in that pack so everyone could, you know, get excited about the next set. But I think Morrow kind of put that to bed pretty quickly. He was like, you know, if we were going to do that, I think we would pick something a little more excited than a 23rd pick card in Limited.
I'm under the impression that they have very tight control of their stuff, and I don't understand how a common from Modern Masters would end up in the Guild Runner promos that are meant to be given out from players. Like, to me, these are all plants.
Yeah, there's got to be plants. They have to be.
I don't know. Like, they do a lot of this stuff third party. Do you really think a third party couldn't screw up? How many miscuts and misprints and all that kind of crap do we have?
Do you know what, dude, the uproar you get? All of a sudden you got people, they got these cards and now they're going to display it and everyone's like, ooh, wow, this is a simple card.
Yes, everyone's so excited for Aether Spellbomb after they banned Second Sunrise.
Yeah, but it, like they're completely different print runs. They're completely different sheets. Like, the level of incompetency that would be required to put an Aether Spellbomb into a promo Guild Runners pack is, like, astounding.
Yeah.
So, like, 99.9% plan.
Is that as incompetent as having cards in booster packs of Dragon's Maze that, like, some of the uncommons were upside down and some were right side up? Because we saw that. How about double rares? We saw that. We saw all kind of crap.
Yeah, but like, that's, like, literally one thing that has to go wrong for that to happen. For something to get pulled from the wrong sheet, cut, then thrown into the wrong cards, and then inserted into a small thing. Like, it's like six different things that have to go wrong. That's the difference.
Unless they're right next to each other. Like, how do you get a Harry Potter back on a card or, you know, pictured Charlie Brown on a card? I'm just saying, like, if they're on the same line, I don't know. Okay.
Okay, you believe the hype. You could believe Wizards hype.
Yep, okay, 9/11 was an inside job, Corbin, whatever.
You're gonna bring up printing it right.
Believe all you want.
20
okay.
years ago.
So how boring is this card, though? I mean, what does this tell you about Modern Masters? There's going to be some filler cards that are completely...
It's not... You know what? Honestly, it's not filler. I like Aether Spellbomb a lot in Limited.
Yeah, it's very
played,
good.
But is it played in Constructed at all?
No, but I don't think every card's going to be Constructed play. I don't think every card's going to be a competitively played card. I think Doubling Season will be in the set.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Why wouldn't it be?
No, like I think
there's no reason not to have something like Doubling Season. It would be great not to have that card be $20.
Yeah, I would love to be able to pick up Doubling Season
$20. They would probably love if Doubling Season were $10. Yeah, because that's probably the number one complaint of EDH players.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, they want it, like the people who play not competitive EDH, but the people who play EDH in general. I generally see the store sitting there playing their 4-man game. Don't have obnoxious, you know, infinite combos on turn 3 in their decks. They're playing a bunch of dirtles and hoping that they can smash their guys past their opponent's guys and deal them some damage. And like, that's just generally what EDH is for most people. We just happen to know a competitive crowd. And they love that kind of shit. They want it cheaper. They're not the kind of people who want to spend
$100
on a deck.
You know what? If Doubling Season were $10, I would sell 3 times as many of them.
Yeah.
So I would actually make more money selling 3 times as many at half the price.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, and I think it definitely just goes to show that... Like, in some... And I think this happened when the Elf spec call got spoiled. You know, I said, hey, Heritage Druid's probably not a bad pickup. It's an uncommon. People immediately shot back, oh, no, it's going to be a Modern Masters for sure. And it's like, they can't reprint everything. They have to actually round out the set. So, like, that's why I think you can expect a lot more cards like Aether Spellbomb that probably play fine and draft fine. But, like, not every card in here is just going to be a money card.
So, while we're on the subject of Modern Masters Limited is going to be the format for Grand Prix Las Vegas, a Grand Prix that Ryan and I have decided it makes no sense to fly to. What Ryan and I have decided to do, and we have announced this on the various social media, we are actually going to leave on the Monday of the week of the GP, and we are going to drive from Michigan all the way to Las Vegas, stopping at many shops along the way, and spending all of our money on magical creds. So... look for us to routinely update from the road and give you guys a nice recap in our articles when we get back.
Yeah. Including your guys' first swing through Oklahoma, right? You guys haven't been here before?
No.
I've never been to Oklahoma.
He's bribing you guys. I heard he bribed you guys with some B-dubs, and that's all it took for you to go.
Oh, that's right.
He's like, we have the world's best Buffalo Wild Wings right here.
He has actual buffalo wings. Like, they're buffaloes that had wings because they're
genetically buffalo. Modified by Simic. Flying buffaloes that they murdered.
And still not as good as most other restaurants.
So, yeah, Corbin, so you're gonna jump in midway. So this actually sounds very cool.
We're actually going to pick up Corbin because we hate ourselves and want our trip to be terrible. So we're going to endure an extra 3 days of Corbin so you on the podcast don't have to.
But they will. We're going to be doing some recap interviews and stuff. We'll sit there at night and talk about it. And we'll make sure we get that extra stuff up for the website, too. So anyone who's interested in more than just the podcast each week, you know, if you kind of want to follow what we've been doing throughout that week, we're going to make sure to record plenty of, you know, side event stuff and talk really just about some of the shops we stop in and maybe some of the misconceptions people have about, you know, these casual shops that most people wouldn't be willing to stop into because they don't really do competitive magic. But we'll get more into that as we get closer. I think for now we're about ready to wrap it up. Just want to, you know, let everybody know that that is our plan, and the three of us will be podcasting from the road for those 2 weeks. So you'll really get kind of, you know, right then and there kind of interview too.
So follow us on the Twitter, follow us on the Facebook, follow our various social media as we kind of live update you from that trip. And hey, why don't you listen to all that free content while wearing your new Brainstorm Brewery t-shirt.
There you go. Wrap it up. That's how you bring it all together.
That's how you bring it all together. You
That's
wrap
a
it
segue.
Up. That's a classic Marcel segue.
And we will, with that, we'll see you all next week. Thank you for listening.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Independently.
Oh my god.
Wait. What happened? So how's this work out?
The moderator.
Someone we don't know and have no influence over obviously listens to us or has seen Shut Up Corbin happen enough times that they gave him like a tag on the forum as Shut Up Corbin. So whenever he posts, that's what it says.
It'll say "shut up" every time he posts in that subreddit.
So how they know it's him, though? I mean, they just
because it's my Twitter name.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I was like, "Where did this come from?" I don't understand.
Oh, that means we really had that. We should just probably do a Shut Up Corbin t-shirt up there and see how many they'll sell. You know?
I bet we sell out of those.
That's probably. Because if you look in the subreddit too, I'm like, hey, you know, if you got any ideas for future t-shirts like Shut Up Corbin or something like that, and someone's like, yeah, I definitely second Shut Up Corbin.
I think that's the moderator, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's the person who did this to me.
We're gonna do this test. We have to do. So you want to have Shut Up Corbin on the front and then the logo
and
on
the
back.
The Brainstorm Brewery logo on the back.
Brainstorm Brewery on the front.
And then Shut Up Corbin.
I don't know. I'm fine with you.
How do you want it, Corbin? You get to have the ultimate deciding.
Yeah, you know what? You get to decide, Corbin.
You probably put Shut Up Corbin on the back, right?
How would you feel when you see somebody wearing a shirt?
Do
you want to look at them when they have the Shut Up Corbin?
That's hilarious.
But I'm Corbin!
I don't think you're going to reach a goal selling them, but it is funny.
So that means
I think we could have triple the goal we currently have and we would sell them.
I think that would be it.
That's awesome if that's what we can do, but I don't think it's going to happen just because, like, I mean, you can literally only wear that to a Magic tournament.
In fact, I will make you a FOGO bet.
Oh, my God, no.
That this shirt sells twice as much as this shirt sells twice as much as any of the other shirts.
No, I'm not making a bet on this. This is retarded. I'm not making another bet.
Kind of hungry. I wanted tacos.